No matter what you've heard, if you like your doctor or healthcare plan, you can keep it.
But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
You know they're still lying about that? And it looks like the Supreme Court's going to get a do-over. We'll see if we can get to that sometime in today's podcast. Hi there. Welcome to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and yes, a bit of absurdity. It is Super Tuesday. That means that people are going to the polls in many states across the nation today and voting for various things. Among those things, they're voting in the Democratic primaries. And a lot of states participating today means that there will be a lot of news coverage about the vote throughout the day. A lot of speculation and not much else than speculation. You hear the echo? That's not my usual echo. It's because I was working on another. Hold on just a second. Let me slide over here and turn that down. That's what I get for having the other computer that actually does the recording just out of reach. And I left the speakers up while I was checking something. But there will be a lot of speculation today, all day long, about who is doing well, who is not doing well, who is going to be benefiting the most from this day of many states voting. But we won't really know anything until after the polls close, state by state by state. And they will across the nation, because if you look at the map, you see that this Super Tuesday is being participated in by states literally from the east to the west. So once that all closes down, we'll really know how things have spelled out for this day, but not until then. And as usual, the speculation will press forward, and all of these people who say they're super wise, they're super smart, they've got a real finger on the pulse of how this is going to work, all of those people who trust the polling, which got them in so much trouble in 2016, will have a great deal of wisdom to to pass along today. And all I can say is, just hang on and wait until we really know what we really know. It's already fairly obvious that the Democrat National Committee and the Democrat Party are working on making Joe Biden their candidate. It's already fairly obvious that Bernie Sanders, regardless of how popular he may be in some parts of the country, that the Democrat Party, if they have their way, is going to shut Bernie Sanders out. Now, please understand that either way, Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden, either way, Trump is going to win in November. But just watch how the Democrat Party operates and see how they handle this and see their rationale. Watch closely as this day progresses and the weeks following progress, because you'll see that these guys in the DNC, they're not playing fair. They're not playing things by the rules. They are going to stack everything they can for creepy Uncle Joe. Joe Biden, the guy who says things like this.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the... You know the thing.
Baby, kumquat, squash, aardvark, shrimp. He had no idea where he was going. He completely brain farted on the Declaration of Independence. All men and women created equal, and you know the thing. And there are those who are trying to say that he was using the words "the thing" to describe God, when no, he was using it to describe the rest of the statement that he couldn't remember. Well, you know the thing. This is a guy who's, we're watching his mind disintegrate. We're watching him lose his train of thought. We're watching him forget where he is. We're watching him call people by the wrong name. He was on with Chris Matthews over the, not Chris Matthews, he was on Fox News and called the host, whose name is Chris, called him Chuck. Thank you, Mr. Biden. Thank you, Chuck. And it's just nuts. I got Chris Matthews on the brain because of what he did. He resigned. He resigned his position. He retired on the air last night. I'll talk about that in a few minutes. But Biden, God love him. The guy is Mr. Gaffe. He comes across as being really sharp and really slick and really polished from time to time, but you can tell when his mouth is outrunning his brain, and it's tragic.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the, go, you know the thing.
You know the thing. I'm sorry. I shouldn't laugh at the guy. It's a sad situation. But, this is the guy that these people are throwing their endorsement behind. Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, stepping out of the race yesterday and throwing their endorsement to Joe Biden. I know that there are those who say this is not so, but it's becoming fairly clear that these people are all being told, you're going to drop out and you're going to endorse Joe Biden. And we're going to make something good happen for you if you do. And that's not just me reading what other people have said. That's me seeing how these people operate. I seriously believe that these people have been made some promises. And when you look at what they believe, what they've been talking about, you look at what they stand for, an administration made up of these people is a dangerous thing for the United States of America. It just is. Now, let's look at this from a slightly different angle, shall we? Is that okay with you? Sure, let's look at it from a slightly different angle. What if something bizarre happens and Joe Biden actually is elected president? I know, not going to happen. Don't get yourself all in a huff. But what if, can we play that game for just a moment? Joe Biden is proving that he's incompetent. But the DNC, the Democrat Party, are behind him. Why? Because the party and the DNC both are aware of something that most people are not. All they need in the chair, facing the camera, reading the teleprompter, is a warm body with a smile. That's all they need. Because that guy is not pulling the strings. That guy's not calling the shots. That guy is not running things when it comes to the Democrats. So it doesn't matter to them. Now, Bernie Sanders, they don't want him because they know he's a loose cannon. He's going to say what he really thinks, and he's not controllable. And even if he is controllable, the blowback from him not doing what he has said he would do during the campaign would be incredible. It would be incredible. Because face it, Bernie can't do what he has been saying he'll do. He can't. Our system is not structured to allow him to do these things. What he has promised to do would require throwing out our system of government and starting from scratch. He can't do what he has promised to do. He's lying. Which is what socialists do to get the vote. But Joe Biden is just Charlie McCarthy to these people. He's the puppet in the chair, and they're the ones pulling the strings. So that's why, if you've been wondering, how could they? This guy's he's a wreck. He's constantly making mistakes. I mean, for example,
we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the, go, you know the thing.
Thanks, Chuck. Stuff like this happens with him constantly. That and forgetting where he is, saying he's in the wrong city, calling people by the wrong name. He was an embarrassment when he was the vice president, which is why they kept him under wraps so much. You very rarely saw him out in public. And every time you did, he was doing something embarrassing. Do you really think he's qualified to lead the nation, the most powerful nation in the free world? Do you really think he is? Of course not. But to the Democrat Party and the Democrat National Committee, it doesn't matter. Because he's not the person who's going to be making all the decisions. He's not going to be making the calls. He's just the guy in front of the camera, the guy with a smile, the guy shaking hands. And he'll have a team of people scripting everything he says and planning out everything he does and keeping him in between the ditches, which they've been unsuccessful doing during the campaign. That's how they can get behind somebody like Bernie, like Joe Biden. They know that America won't stand for a socialist, a communist in the White House. They've read the tea leaves. They know that's not going to happen. So their answer is good old dependable Joe that everybody loves. Yeah, he may make a few mistakes, but he's got it where it counts. Trust me, this man is not the Millennium Falcon. This man is broken down on the side of the road needing help constantly. And that is the whole rationale, as I see it. They want Joe Biden because they can control Joe Biden. It's like Weekend at Bernie's. They're just propping the guy up and setting the stage so that everything looks right. And in case you were ever wondering about how Barack Obama managed to do anything, that's exactly how things worked while he was president. He had a group of people running things, pulling all the strings, calling all the shots, writing all the speeches, feeding the teleprompters for him. He just learned his lines and did what they told him to do. Early on during Obama's presidency, I kept looking and watching and thinking, how can this lightweight be doing all this stuff? How can this guy be the president of the United States? How? And then it began occurring to me that he was surrounded by people who were closely controlling everything. And those people are still closely controlling everything they can. A lot of those people are still working in Washington, D.C. in the same positions they held during the Obama administration. And some of those people have lately been fired. And the deep staters are livid. They're unhappy about it. You see, what's been going on for quite a while in Washington, D.C. is that the bureaucracy, the unelected people, are the ones who've been running things. They've been writing the speeches. They've been supervising the writing of the speeches. They've been staging the public appearances. They've been crafting the words that come up on the teleprompters. And they have been pointing the guy in the suit to whatever camera he's supposed to be looking at the time. And they have held sessions prepping him on how to answer the questions. It's been going on for quite some time. And the reason we can know that is because right now, the guy in the Oval Office, that guy who was not a politician when he started all of this, the guy who was a reality show star, the guy who was a real estate developer in New York, the guy who was not in the realm of politics, who managed to beat all of the people from the realm of politics, that guy, it's obvious watching him. And it's obvious watching how his administration is working that he is not listening to all of those people who've been pulling the strings for so long. And they hate him for it. Which explains Russia, the Ukraine, impeachment, and everything else they've been doing. They're trying to get rid of the guy who won't play the game according to their rules. And that's exactly why we need to put him back in office this November. Otherwise, we just get another puppet. More after the break, when the Daily Perspective continues.
What are you, turning into some kind of feminist?
What? What did I say? What? Hey, welcome back to the Daily Perspective. It's the Tuesday edition of the podcast, March 3rd, 2020. And there's a lot of stuff going on. Let's shift gears and get away from politics here. We may get back to it in a little bit, but, well, when you really think about it, it's all politics, especially the way the news media and the left, the leftists in politics are working hand in hand to shape and twist and create the news stories which suit their purposes. And one of those things has been the coronavirus, COVID-19. It's an interesting thing that everybody went crazy over. They panicked over to begin with. And yet now, when we really look at the real statistics, we see things aren't as bad as they have projected them to be. And that, in fact, things are starting to taper off in China. We'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. But first up, health officials in Georgia yesterday confirmed the state's first two cases of the novel coronavirus. Adding to a seemingly growing list of cases in the United States, which has now seen at least six deaths from the virus. In a news release yesterday, the Georgia Department of Public Health said the two cases of COVID-19 were confirmed in Fulton County and involved two people who live in the same household. One of the two had recently returned from Italy, which has experienced a surge of cases in recent weeks. The release reads, both have mild symptoms. They are isolated at home with other relatives to keep the illness from spreading. The Georgia DPH is now working to identify anyone who may have been exposed to the virus while the two were infectious. It's worth noting that scientists think people who are asymptomatic can spread the virus, though how often this occurs is currently unclear. Health officials said people who are identified as having been exposed will be contacted directly by a DPH epidemiologist and monitored for fever and respiratory symptoms. Our team has been working around the clock to prepare for any scenario. Already, state health officials have established contact with these individuals to gather more information, monitor their condition, and determine any exposure. That's what Georgia Governor Brian Kemp said in a statement. In response to the cases, health officials reminded residents of best practices for staying healthy, which includes proper hand washing. Proper hand washing is not just the slapdash thing because you're in a hurry. You need to pay some attention and actually use soap and hot water and scrub your hands really nicely for at least 20 seconds, 20 to 30 seconds. That's pretty good. And then if you have access to it, use some antibacterial stuff. You know what I mean? Put some stuff on your hands after that. And then you're not going to be spreading it if you have it, and you have a lessened chance of contracting it if you had it on your hands from something you touched. I would also encourage, if you are in a restroom where the door closes, because that it kind of, in some places, in some large places, they have things set up so you walk around a corner and then around another wall and there's no doors. But in places where you've got to grab a door handle, I'd grab a paper towel on the way out and grab that door handle, because you'd be surprised how many people are gross. That's all I got to say. They're just gross. Well, the news about Georgia comes after Illinois confirmed its fourth case of the virus on Monday, the wife of the state's third case. To date, the U.S. has reported six virus-related deaths, all of those which occurred in Washington State. By the way, they're all related to the same senior care facility. These are older people who have health challenges. Those are the people who have died. Overall, more than 80 cases of the virus have been reported in the country. Worldwide, more than 91,000 people have been sickened, while more than 3,000 have died, according to Tuesday estimates. Still, the survival rate is very high. It is not as bad even as the flu. And things are making the turn. And I'm trying to find my way over to that particular story right now. And let's pull that one up. In fact, it looks like even in China, we've turned a corner. China closed one of the makeshift hospitals they set up for the first time yesterday, as new coronavirus cases dipped in the country, but continued to spread around the world. It was originally one of 16 rapidly constructed hospitals in the city of Wuhan, which is considered the epicenter of the virus. It closed after discharging its last group of 34 recovered patients. China's recorded just 202 new cases since yesterday, the lowest infected total since January 22nd, according to Reuters. Wuhan had 193 of those cases, its lowest total since January 26th. China constructed its first makeshift hospital in just a week back in early February to house the rapid uptick of infected patients in Wuhan. 16 temporary hospitals were in place later that month, which have treated roughly 12,000 people. Constriction efforts helped to increase the number of beds, increased the number of beds in Wuhan from 5,000 to 23,000. And Grant Geiger, he's the CEO of EIR Healthcare, said a traditional inpatient hospital might take 2+ years to build because there are state and local protections in place, such as zoning laws, code requirements, etc. In an emergency response situation, providing clinical care is paramount. The head of the largest of all the temporary hospitals in Wuhan announced they also plan to close it by the end of the month. Located at an exhibition center, it was designed to treat as many as 2,000 patients and has a staff of 1,260. About 600 of its patients have been released and another 400 were transferred to other hospitals, according to Dr. Zhang Junjian, the director of the hospital. He told the Associated Press, "We expect maybe in mid-March or during the last 10 days of March, our patients will be basically discharged from the hospital because fewer patients are being admitted. And the number of patients being discharged is gradually increasing now. So we can have at least 50 to 100 people discharged every day. If nothing special happens, I expect the operation of our makeshift hospital, the biggest one in Wuhan, could complete its historical mission by the end of March." 18 provinces also lowered their emergency response level over the past week, according to Reuters. While the new cases in China declined, the virus continues to spread worldwide, in part because of its 14-day incubation period and the ease of travel today. New cases continued to soar in Italy, France, Iran, and South Korea, while the Czech Republic, Scotland, Indonesia, and the Dominican Republic all recorded their first infected patients. Florida, Rhode Island, and New York announced their first cases of the coronavirus on Sunday. Two people have died from the virus in Washington State. Actually, it's more than that now. It's six people. Those are the first fatalities recorded in the United States. And as I said before, they were elderly people in an elder care facility. And from what we've been able to tell, they had health issues. They had challenges. So, sorry. So it looks like we're on the downside now. It looks like where it all started, it's beginning to taper off. And it looks like in the areas that it's on the increase, those areas are places with, shall we say, lower public health standards than we have here in the United States. We're much more cautious. We're much more careful. And we have here in the United States the best health care in the world. I know you wouldn't think so if you were listening to politicians today, but we do have the best health care in the world. And as a result of having the best health care in the world, being a world leader in medicine, we will get a handle on this quickly, and we will deal with it quickly. We're already ahead of the curve, as far as how to handle a case when it's found. So we have not all that much to be concerned about here. But you wouldn't know that from the politicians. The politicians are politicizing this, and they're doing everything they can to make it President Trump's Katrina. They want to somehow portray his response to this, which was ahead of everything. While they were trying to impeach him, he was limiting travel from infected places. He was laying the groundwork to make sure that things were handled for us as a nation. While they were focused on destroying his presidency, he was actually being a president. He was actually doing his job. And they were just playing political games. And you can thank him for that. In fact, medical people, scientists, people who would normally not have good things to say about the president are saying, yeah, it's because of his foresight and his quick action. Things are not worse than they are in the United States of America today, as far as the coronavirus is concerned. Honest people, being honest with the rest of the world, are saying he's done a good job. And then there are the politicians and their pets in the progressive press who aren't doing their job. And we'll talk a little bit more about the progressive press not doing its job coming up after the break, when the Daily Perspective continues.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the... Go, you know the thing.
Yeah, the thing. I remember the thing. It's right next to the what's it. It's on the same shelf as the doohickey. I remember the thing. The... You know. Jeez. What do you expect from me? It's the Tuesday edition. The Super Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here. Hoping you're having a fantastic day. Looking forward to a good one, or have had a good one, regardless of when you're listening to the podcast. You're on the live feed in the morning. Hey, glad to have you along for the ride. You're listening later in the day. I hope it's been a good one so far and that the rest of it treats you well. I don't know if you noticed this, but last week we were getting breathless updates. I mean, just almost constant updates about every time anything happened with the Dow Jones average, the stock market, anything that changed. It was all moving downward and everybody was in a panic about what was going to happen. They had no idea what was happening. Everything was going bad. Everything was terrible. Everything was just disastrous. And then it recovered and nobody said a word. It's just crazy. If you have stock market apps on your phone and you keep track of things because you have investments and you're trying to keep track of your retirement funds and the like, then odds are you kept getting little notifications on your telephone that things were dropping. This was dropping. That was dropping. And you were looking at things with your head in your hands, seeing how much money your 401k had lost and various things. Things were bad. Things were bad. You kept getting all these notices, and the news media, you kept getting these news notices, pop, stocks fall again, pop, stocks are falling further, pop, worst day in his, biggest loss ever, biggest, Trump's incompetent, this is, he's ruining everything, everything is horrible, it's not great, you need to, you take precautions, do this, do that, panic, and then the stock market roared back from an abysmal week in response to fears over how the spread of the coronavirus could impact businesses around the country, and you barely saw a one little peep about it. Yeah. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed at 1293.96, points higher, 5.1% at 2673.32, according to CNBC. The move on a percentage basis was the Dow's biggest since March of 2009. It was also the largest ever points gain for the 30-stock average. The S&P 500 climbed 4.6%, its best one-day performance since December 26th of 2018 to close at 3,090.23. The NASDAQ composite also had its best day since 2018, surging 4.5%. Politico reported that the stock market's strong day happened because investors are increasingly anticipating that the Federal Reserve and other major central banks around the world will lower interest rates or take other steps to shield the global economy from the effects of the outbreak. Sam Stovall, chief investment strategist at CFRA, says investors have convinced themselves that global central banks will likely be even more accommodative in order to short-circuit any psychological damage. The stock market bump came as Trump met with the heads of major pharmaceutical companies on Monday in an effort to push them to develop a vaccine for the coronavirus ahead of schedule and to ensure that supply chains would not be disrupted due to the lowered manufacturing in China. Can we translate this all for just a moment, all of this stuff, if you're not one who follows this kind of information? You just put some money in an account on a regular basis, and you know that in the long term, it's going to grow, because that's how this all works, by the way. It has, like I said last week, the stock market has ups and downs, but it's always on an upward trend. Always. There can be good weeks, there can be bad weeks, there can be very scary weeks, but it's always on an upward trend. So you never, never look at the short term. You always look at the long term. What's happening here is there was panic created by leftist politicians and the progressive news media last week. Panic. And people looked at the markets, and they looked at supply chains, and they looked at the way things were going to operate around the world. And based on the panic created by the leftist press and politicians, they reacted. They didn't respond, they reacted. There's a difference. A response is not well considered. It's instinctive. It's like the old thing where they check your reflexes and they hit that certain spot under your kneecap and your leg reacts by twitching and kicking out a little bit. A response is something you think about. You consider the options. And what happened last week was a reaction. And now things are coming back because the news can't be denied that it's not as bad as all of the doomsayers said it was. So all of these prognosticators on the left, in the media and in politics, who were looking for some way to damage Donald Trump with bad news, created a drop in the stock market that scared a lot of people. It was irresponsible, but it's typical, because they honestly don't care how they damage people. What they care about is damaging one person, Donald Trump. So last week, the drop in the stock market was completely and totally the responsibility of progressive politicians and their pets in the progressive press. Because what happened was people reacted to all of this doom and gloom forecasting made by the press and the politicians for the sake of damaging the president. And the result was everything started going crazy. And now that we know more, and we're seeing, like I told you earlier, that makeshift hospitals in China are beginning to be closed because they're getting fewer and fewer cases. And we have a grip on it here in the United States, and we understand it's not even as bad as the flu. They're all saying, oh, well, it's time to buy again. And so there was a big one-day buy-in, people getting back into the market again, taking advantage of the lower prices that were created by the panic from the last week. And things are recovering. They are now. But let's play what if again. What if The progressive press and progressive politicians had been successful in convincing people beyond what they did last week. What would have happened to your retirement account? What would have happened to your plans for your future? What would have happened to the plans of millions of Americans for their futures, who've been responsible, who have been investing, who have been putting cash away for the days when they just want to spend time with their grandchildren and travel and enjoy life? What about those? What about that possibility? Do you believe that the Democrats cared about that at all? No, they didn't. What they cared about was inflicting as much damage as possible on the president, which is what they've been doing since the day he was elected. They've been looking for ways to cut his legs out from under him and to cripple him. All they're thinking about is this November. They're not thinking about your future. They're not thinking about the future of your children or your grandchildren. They're thinking about their future as it relates to this November and a presidential election. This is all they care about. They don't care about you. They don't care about the city you live in. They don't care about their districts back home. If Nancy Pelosi cared about her district back home, there wouldn't be used needles and human feces on the streets. There wouldn't be a massive homeless issue if she really cared about her district back home. If Nancy Pelosi actually cared about her district back home, she would be back home working on ways to change things and influencing politicians there to make wise choices, not just politically advantageous choices. Not just choices that make them look like compassionate, wonderful people, but choices that really do make a difference and change the lives and the lifestyles of the people who have trusted them to govern. But they don't care about that. What they care about is getting reelected at the next election cycle and gaining power back that they lost. And the path to doing that is destroying the president of the United States. And it doesn't matter who they hurt to achieve that goal. They're going to achieve that goal at all costs. And that means hurting you and your future and damaging your retirement account, if that's what it takes. And that's who we're dealing with when we're dealing with the progressive left. We're dealing with a group of people who at the core care about nothing but power and control. Who at the core deeply and passionately believe that they are morally and intellectually superior to you, that you don't understand, and that you need them because you're a moron. That's who we're dealing with. Those are the people who created the stock market fall last week. And they did so not caring a bit about you, your children, or your grandchildren, and their future. They did what they did in an effort to create a Katrina-like situation to destabilize a presidency so that people would have questions and lose their confidence and vote for Democrats in November. And that's exactly why they did what they did. As Donald Trump has said, they're power hungry and they can't be trusted with it. And they should never be elected to power again. I agree. They're abusing the power they have, and they don't care who they hurt in the process. And they can't be allowed to have any more power in the future.
The Democrat Party has become too extreme to be trusted with power. Their radical policies are a danger to your family and to your country.
Indeed, they are. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Glad you're along today. Well, the Supreme Court is going to get a chance to do something over and hopefully get it right this time. The U.S. Supreme Court yesterday agreed to hear a case that could, once and for all, end the abomination that is Obamacare. This is a very welcome development, even though it was brought at the behest of Democrats and gives the majority a chance for a do-over. According to Reuters, the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday agreed to hear a politically explosive case on whether Obamacare is lawful. Taking up a bid by 20 Democratic-led states, including California and New York, to preserve the landmark health care law. The Supreme Court's decision to intervene means the fate of the law, formerly called the Affordable Care Act, or it is actually formally, the ACA, the signature domestic policy achievement of former Democratic President Barack Obama, will be up in the air during the ongoing presidential race. The court is expected to hear arguments and decide the case in its next term. That starts in October and ends in June of next year, meaning a ruling is not likely before the November 3rd election in which Trump is seeking a second term in office. Let's all hope they get it right this time. Obamacare is basically very expensive insurance that is worse than what it replaced. People who get coverage through the exchanges get high deductibles and low coverage that in reality keeps them away from going to a doctor. The cost of insurance to employers has gone through the roof and has forced businesses to find creative ways to manage it, usually by reducing benefits or passing on the increased costs to employees. From the Washington Free Beacon, a coalition of blue states and congressional Democrats filed petitions with the court after the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals struck down the individual mandate in December of 2019. The Trump administration is not defending Obamacare in the courts, leading congressional and state Democrats to intervene and take up the law's defense. Though the Supreme Court sustained the individual mandate on tax grounds in 2012, the Fifth Circuit said that rationale is no longer justifiable because of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. The Trump administration's tax cuts set the financial penalty for failing to purchase health insurance at zero. Judge Jennifer Elrod said in the 2-1 decision that the mandate cannot be treated as a tax if it is not raising any money for the government. Another question in the case is, what should happen to the rest of the Obama administration's signature health care law if the individual mandate is invalidated? A question of severability in legal parlance. After striking down the mandate, the Fifth Circuit returned the case to a federal trial judge to determine whether other provisions of the ACA or the statute in its entirety should be struck down if the mandate is no longer operative. Even the New York Times sees the very real danger to a significant leftist priority. And they tweeted, "Breaking news, the Affordable Care Act, which has survived two major Supreme Court challenges, will be tested again in a case with the potential to wipe it out." Let's hope that the new conservative majority of justices gets the case right this time. Last time, Roberts flubbed it, appearing to switch sides at the last minute. This time, he gets a do-over with Obamacare and hopefully does the right thing rather than the expedient thing, or what he thinks will make him popular with the left. I hope that this comes out the right way. And I hope that the Supreme Court actually looks at this and realizes, well, given the way things are now, it's not actually a tax. And since it's not raising funds for the United States government, then it's no longer valid. Hopefully, we can get back to some semblance of normalcy again. Does that mean that your health insurance costs will go down? Probably not. If I'm honest. Probably not. Because the way things work in the business world is once you've got a price set, the vast majority of the time, you don't go back down on that price. It just doesn't happen. You charge what the market will bear. If people are buying your product or service at the price you've set, you keep that price. The only thing that drives prices down is competition. And we still have laws preventing competition. You can't shop across the country for your insurance plan. You have to take what's offered in your state. If you were able to shop around, they would compete with each other by offering you better prices, better packaging, better services. They'd develop a better product for you and a more attractive price in order to get your business. But since they don't have to, they won't. So what needs to happen after this decision, if it goes the correct way, and Obamacare is finally thrown into the dumpster fire that is the left's entire view of life in America today, what will happen next is that wall will be torn down that prevents competition across state lines. And we'll be able to shop for insurance, which meets our needs both physically and financially. That's what has to happen. Until that happens, the prices are not going to go down. But you will be able to choose packages which are more attractive to you, because at least that will happen. That the things that were mandated by the ACA will no longer be mandated, because the ACA won't exist. And insurance companies can once again offer you packages that better fit you and your family's life, which was something that was lost when the ACA was passed. So many people have talked about how they lost their insurance coverage. They lost what they had before and had to choose a package that was not as good as what they had before. And it ended up costing them more. And I think you may be probably one of those people. I know I am. I know our insurance costs went up. Our coverage changed. We weren't happy with what we were having to pay for. And a lot of people are having to pay for coverage they don't need. Simply because government dictated what had to be covered rather than the marketplace. And that's one of the big problems when government gets involved in things, is it's really, really bad. It's really bad at everything it does. And if you don't believe me, take your lunch break and go to the post office and try to do some business today. If you don't believe me, give it a shot. And you'll see what happens when government runs things. Because the Postal Service is constantly in the red. It loses billions of dollars a year. It's lousy at what it does, considering its competition. And its competition outstrips them in every way. Price-wise, there's not that much of a difference. Service-wise, UPS and FedEx and the rest just do a better job. If you really want to have something delivered overnight and you want to know where it is every step of the way, odds are you're not choosing the Postal Service to deliver your package. If you order something online, you shop online, and you get to the end of the process and you pick your shipping method and you see that it's U.S. Postal Service, if you're like me, you bite your lip and you shake your head and you think, maybe I should buy this from somebody else who offers UPS or FedEx. Because if I do, then I'll get updates on my phone. I don't have to go to another level of service to get the reports that I want. and I'll know where it is all the time. Yeah, the Postal Service does offer that. It is there. But it's not as user-friendly. It's not as easy to do. It's not as easy to find. And odds are you've been through this where you've ordered something online. It's been shipped by U.S. Postal Service. And the method you choose looks like it's the top line. It's the best. And basically what you find out from your tracking is that they've arranged for it to be shipped, but you never know where it is until it's on your doorstep. I can't count the number of times that's happened to me. Well, that's not what people expect today. They want to be able to check on their phone and see where that package is at any moment. If you're having lunch and it occurs to you, oh yeah, that's supposed to be delivered. When is that? Is it today or tomorrow? You look at your phone and you know. You pull up an app and you know exactly where your package is and when to expect it. But not with the U.S. Postal Service. Or not as easily. And still, even though they're trying to compete, they're still losing billions of dollars a year. And that one example should serve as an example of why we don't want the government involved in choosing our health coverage. Because that mentality, that lack of ability to really understand what the public wants, what the market will bear, only serves as the proof that we all need that we shouldn't be allowing these same people to determine how to take care of our family's health care. Let us make that choice. Let us be able to shop. Let us be able to pick what's best for us and set the marketplace free so that it can set prices and we can save money and get the coverage we want and need. Government needs to take its hands off and set it free. I don't think it's going to happen, but that's what needs to happen. And now I need to get out of the way. God bless you. Have a good Tuesday. Get out there and cast that vote. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the next edition of The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.